Welcome to Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio for Monday, October 19th, 2020. Here are some of your headlines. President Donald Trump calls Dr. Anthony Fauci, the government's top infectious disease expert, a disaster, and says that if he had followed all of Dr. Fauci's advice on the coronavirus pandemic, the U.S. would have 700,000 to 800,000 deaths right now. 15 days until Election Day, the president continues to crisscross the country, holding rallies in battleground states. Today in Arizona, Vice President Mike Pence campaigns in Maine and Pennsylvania. Democratic nominee Joe Biden spending a good deal of time this week preparing for Thursday's final presidential debate, while his vice presidential running mate Kamala Harris stumps in Florida, which started early voting today. We'll talk with a politics reporter from the Palm Beach Post about the state of the presidential race in Florida. Time growing short to reach a deal on another coronavirus economic aid package. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi gives the Trump administration until Tuesday to finalize a comprehensive deal if it's going to pass before the election. Supreme Court says it's going to hear challenges to the Trump administration's use of Pentagon money to build a southern border wall, and also to its rule that asylum applicants from Mexico must return to that country while waiting for their appeals to be heard. And the Justice Department announces charges against current and former Russian military intelligence officers for allegedly engaging in a series of hacking and malware attacks against infrastructure and elections in foreign countries. The hackers are all members of the same agency, the GRU, involved in efforts to interfere in the 2016 U.S. presidential election. And we start with the presidential campaign. President Trump held a conference call with about 2,000 campaign staffers today, a number of reporters listening in. The president saying he believes he's going to win re-election and that he did not have the same confidence 3 weeks ago when he was in the hospital with COVID-19. He also heavily criticized Dr. Anthony Fauci, head of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, saying people are tired of hearing Fauci and all these idiots, these people that have gotten it wrong. Fauci is a nice guy. He's been there for 500 years. He called every one of them wrong. He said, Fauci, if we listened to him, we'd have 700,000 to 800,000 deaths right now. So with that, I get along with him. If there's a reporter on, you can have it just the way I said it. I couldn't care less. President's remarks came after Dr. Fauci said in an interview on CBS's 60 Minutes on Sunday that he wasn't surprised the president contracted the coronavirus after a White House event recognizing the president's Supreme Court nominee, during which guests were not wearing masks or social distancing. President Trump spoke to reporters after landing at the airport today in Prescott, Arizona.
Why did you criticize Dr. Fauci? Does it have anything to do with his high standing in public sentiment?
No, I think really Dr. Fauci's a very nice man, but we let him do what he wants to do. He gets a lot of television. He loves being on television, and we let him do it. Sometimes he says things that are a little bit off and they get built up, unfortunately, but he's a nice guy. I like him, but he's called a lot of bad calls. He said, don't wear a mask, and he said, don't ban China. They were bad calls. He admits that, and I don't hold that against him. If I did, I wouldn't have him. No, I think he's a nice guy. Huh? I don't want to. I don't want to hurt him. He's been there for about 350 years. I don't want to hurt him.
President Trump with reporters in Arizona. Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden put out a statement. Coronavirus infections are spiking across the country, but President Trump decided to attack Dr. Fauci again as a disaster and call public health experts idiots instead of laying out a plan to beat this virus or heeding their advice about how we can save lives and get our economy moving again. And a tweet from Republican Senator Lamar Alexander, chair of the Health Committee. Dr. Fauci is one of our country's most distinguished public servants. He has served six presidents, starting with Ronald Reagan. More Americans paid attention to his advice, we'd have fewer cases of COVID-19, and it would be safer to go back to school and back to work and out to eat. The U.S. has 8.1 million coronavirus cases, most of any country, over 215,000 deaths. Worldwide total is now past 40 million and over 1.1 million deaths. More from President Trump and the reporters talking about coronavirus and also Thursday's presidential debate with Joe Biden, moderated by Kristen Welker of NBC News.
And by the way, the fact that Kristen Welker is, you know, a dyed-in-the-wool radical left Democrat or whatever she is. Okay. Okay, then ask, why are you defending her? Then ask her, why did she delete her account? Would you please have her put her account back? And you know what? It's not going to affect. I know you want to stick up. It's not going to affect me. I'm going to be there. But, you know, I told you about the last one, and I was right. And I told you about Savannah Guthrie, and I was right. And I'm telling you about Kristen Welker. Kristen Welker should put all of her statements back on. She deleted her entire account. She shouldn't do that.
With what? Did they find have the moderator be able to turn off the mics? Is that what
I have no idea. I'm doing this. What am I doing to prepare? I'm doing this. I've done very well in debates, and you know, you do what you do. You just do what you do. The last debate, I had 2-on-1. I usually have 2-on-1 at least. And I did well on the last debate, and we did well with Savannah Guthrie based on reports. But all you can do is, look, you know, you go around, we do interviews with you. This is like, I call this debate prep. This is actually tougher than a debate, if you want to know the truth.
Will you do the testing before the debate, and were you authorized? Will you do the testing before the debate, and were you
authorized?
Yes, the COVID testing. And will you authorize your doctors to tell us when
you tested? I would have no problem with it. I'm not only am I free, positive, or whatever, what would you call it? I'm totally free, right? Not only am I free, I'm immune, they say. They say if you've had it, you're immune. Now, the question is, are you immune for 4 months or for the rest of your life? That's the only thing we don't know.
Do you authorize your doctors to tell you when you tested negative last before
sure.
the last
Is that
event?
Very important to you? You
yes,
seem
sure
to
it
be
is.
So intent. But if it's so important to you, why is it so important to you?
Because we want to know how long
know,
you may
why?
Have been.
Why?
We want to know if you followed the rules.
I know, but why is it so important to you?
Do you authorize your
Look
doctors
at the dedication.
To release
that information? Yeah, my doctors have already given it. You know, my doctors have given more information than has been given on any human being in the history of the world.
The campaign strategy seems to be to call Biden a criminal. Why is that?
He is a criminal. He's a criminal. He got caught. Read his laptop. And you know who's a criminal? You're a criminal for not reporting it. You are a criminal for not reporting it. Let me tell you something. Joe Biden is a criminal, and he's been a criminal for a long time, and you're a criminal in the media for not reporting it.
President Trump in Prescott, Arizona, also had a second rally in Arizona in Tucson. A new Gallup poll shows a record number of American voters, 77%, believe this year's presidential election is more important than elections in the past. The previous high was 2008, with 74% believing that year was more important than previous elections. From Fox News, Director of National Intelligence John Ratcliffe said that Hunter Biden's laptop is not part of some Russian disinformation campaign, amid claims from House Intelligence Committee Chair Adam Schiff suggesting otherwise. Emails allegedly from that computer given to and published by the New York Post by President Trump's attorney Rudy Giuliani suggesting Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden had knowledge of and was allegedly involved in his son's foreign business dealings in China and Ukraine. At the same time, though, sources tell USA Today the FBI is looking into whether this is all part of a disinformation campaign pushed by Russia. Back to the coronavirus, and today, vice presidential nominee for the Democrats, Senator Kamala Harris, was in Florida.
You know, here in Florida, already you all know, 1 in 8 Floridians describe their household as being hungry in September. 1 in 8. 1 in 5 Floridians describe that they couldn't pay the rent in the month of September. And let's think about how we got here. I don't know if y'all saw that debate that we did a couple weeks ago. But you know, Joe's been on the stage debating. We have another debate coming up. He did an amazing job at that town hall. Did y'all watch that? Right? It was a true exercise in contrast. So what we know is this. Back in January, the current occupant of the White House knew he had inside information. He knew that this virus was 5 times more deadly than the flu. He knew it would impact children of America. He knew it was airborne. But what did he do? He kept that information to himself. I call it a cover-up. He didn't let you know on January 28th what he knew on January 28th. Can you imagine if you all knew, if we knew on January 28th what he knew? Can you imagine what parents and families and each of us might have been able to do to prepare for this?
Democratic vice presidential nominee Kamala Harris in Orlando, Florida. She also had a campaign event in Jacksonville, Florida, one of the largest battleground states in the presidential race. And joining us now with more on this is Antonio Finns, politics and Trump news editor with the Palm Beach Post and USA Today Florida Network. Thanks for being with us. What are the latest polls in Florida showing in the presidential race?
That it is tight as usual. The spread will go from about even to Biden up by a few points. Earlier this year, Trump had a lead, and then that flipped once the pandemic hit, and then Mr. Biden was enjoying a, depending on which poll you were looking at, a 5 or 6 point lead. But I think most analysts today believe here that this is a toss-up, and that it is a race that will be decided by what comes down to a landslide in Florida, which is, you know, a 1 percentage point or less.
When it comes to Florida, very big state, a lot of diverse demographics, but we often hear about two key groups, seniors and Hispanics. How important will they be to winning this time?
You know, they're going to be decisive depending on how they break for either candidate. Seniors is a group that in 2016 the president did extremely well with. This time around, we're hearing different, much more of a mixed result simply because of the pandemic and the way that many older voters in the state believe that the handling of the pandemic has not been, it's not been a very efficient and one that they approve of. We've seen that very consistently. Hispanics, on the other hand, breaks down into different groups. The two largest ones are Cuban Americans that predominate in South Florida, and Puerto Ricans who are in South Florida but also predominate in the battleground I-4 corridor, which is in Central Florida. And those are the two, and they could cancel each other out. We're got indications that we're hearing is the Cuban American vote is swinging very heavily toward Mr. Trump, whereas the Puerto Rican vote in Central Florida is kind of up in the air, but has been, I think most analysts I've spoken to believe that it will break Democratic, although it has to be pointed out that the Republican Party is running some very strong Puerto Rican candidates for Congress and the state house in Central Florida, and hoping to, to siphon off some of those votes. So that's why, this is a very – this state is divided down the middle. If you look at the voter registration, the last numbers we got before right after voter registration, the deadline earlier this month passed, it has almost an even breakdown of Democrats and Republicans, and then it's almost a one-third split between Republicans, Democrats, and no party-affiliated voters. So you cannot get a more even breakdown than what you see in Florida.
Today is the start of early voting in Florida, and like many other states, we're seeing video of long lines. What's happening in your area?
Well, we're hearing, the good thing about being part of the USA Today Florida Network is that we have news organizations all over the state. So we're hearing, in most places, I think if you're going to toss an average, it's the wait is somewhere between an hour and 90 minutes, which is obviously a very long wait, but obviously not like what we saw in other states. But we have seen some really inspiring scenes, including here in Southeast Florida where I'm at. It has been a rainy day, and there have been photos of people in line outside in a torrential downpour, not budging, waiting in line to cast their vote. So we're seeing, long lines. It is the first day of early voting. I think that we have seen so far a lot of voter enthusiasm, even before early voting started early this morning. What we were seeing in terms of mail, the numbers in mail-in ballots was just phenomenal. We numbers like this state has never been seen. In fact, I think we're almost with, just a little over 2 weeks to go before they actually start counting the votes. We're looking at, in terms of mailed-in ballots, almost at the level of what we saw in 2016. So voter enthusiasm is higher than I think I've ever seen it.
We're talking with Antonio Finns of the Palm Beach Post and USA Today Florida Network. Former Democratic presidential candidate and billionaire Michael Bloomberg announced with a big splash some time ago he was going to spend $100 million in advertising in Florida on behalf of Joe Biden. Do you know if he's done that, and has there been any impact that you've seen?
Well, the biggest impact is that he was spending close to $20 million to help former felons be able to register to vote in accordance with a constitutional amendment that voters passed in the state of Florida in 2018 and that the state lawmakers put into play with some caveats about making sure that those who had been convicted of crimes in the past, that they, before they get to register to vote, that they have paid off all their fines and restitution. And the focus of a very intense court battle. And one of the things that Mr. Bloomberg did, he stepped in and he said that he would, I think, commit somewhere in the neighborhood of about $16 million to pay off all those fines and owed restitution to clear the path for a lot of these former felons to vote. In addition to that, we have seen a lot of campaign ads. It's you can't say it's all from Bloomberg's money. But, it's obviously he has really had an impact in the state. I think last week he also committed about $250,000 to a group in our area in Boca Raton and in Southeast Florida that is a Jewish voter pack, to basically, gear digital ads at that very important voter group. So, I haven't totaled up the money. I can't tell you it's $100 million, but it has been a significant investment.
Antonio Finns, politics and Trump news editor with Palm Beach Post and USA Today Florida Network. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
You're listening to Washington Today.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
Coronavirus economic aid negotiations between House Democrats and the Trump administration have been going on for a couple of weeks, but may come to an end one way or another tomorrow. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, setting a 48-hour deadline, did so on Sunday, so that would be Tuesday, as the deadline to reconcile remaining disputes in order to get a bill passed before the November election. An update from White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows with reporters outside the White House Monday morning.
The House Speaker, as you know, has set this 48-hour deadline, she says, to jumpstart talks. She says she's hopeful about the prospect of a deal, but that it ultimately depends on the White House. What's your view?
Well, obviously, there's more than just the White House that's negotiating. The 48-hour deadline is certainly welcomed by us. We thought that there should have been a 48-day deadline 48 days ago, and it's been really the Speaker that continues to be very rigid in her negotiation. It's her way or the highway. It's all or nothing. The American people don't understand that. Many of her Democrat colleagues don't understand that. And I can tell you the president has asked us to engage. If she's willing to work in terms of some of the extreme policy initiatives that she's put forth and work on those issues. I think the secretary and I have had a number of very fruitful discussions over the last several days that give us a hope that we might be able to reach some kind of an agreement in the next 48 hours.
How realistic is the idea that Senate Republicans are going to jump on board with trillions of dollars in spending, something that they've been vocal in opposition to?
Yeah, the Senate Republicans have been very vocal in terms of their lack of support of a number that is even close to what the president has already supported at the $1.88 trillion range. I can tell you this, that there are some in the Senate that would support it. Whether there's enough votes to get to the 60-vote threshold, that's up to Leader McConnell. He has agreed that he's willing to go ahead and put forth the bill. If we have a bipartisan agreement on the bill, he'll bring it to the floor and actually have a vote. And yet, it's too early to tell.
Quick follow-up. How is the president personally courting these senators spend that much? Is he appealing to them personally?
He hasn't been reaching out to individual senators because we haven't been close enough to actually look at the merits of the deal. We've made an offer. She's made really the same offer over and over again. She hasn't really even made counter offers. If you come inside the room and on those phone calls, she's been pretty much consistent with where she's been, which is either 2.2 or 2.4 trillion, depending on how you count the number. Obviously, we've increased our offer up to almost 1.9 trillion, and he's willing to give some additional money in terms of direct payments. He's willing to give some additional money in terms of PPP help to restaurants and hotels and small businesses, most of the differences are not in those two areas.
The White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows with reporters outside the White House Monday morning. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's Deputy Chief of Staff Drew Hamill tweeting mid-afternoon, "The Speaker and Secretary Mnuchin," referring to the Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin, "spoke at 3 p.m. Eastern today for approximately 53 minutes. In this call, they continue to narrow their differences. The Speaker has tasked committee chairs to reconcile differences with their GOP counterparts on key areas. The Speaker continues to hope that by the end of the day Tuesday, we will have clarity on whether we will be able to pass a bill before the election. The two principals will speak again tomorrow, and staff work will continue around the clock." Those two tweets from the Speaker's spokesperson. Meanwhile, over in the Senate, the Majority Leader Mitch McConnell scheduling votes on two smaller coronavirus aid bills. One on Tuesday, a standalone Paycheck Protection Program bill to help small businesses. And then on Wednesday, a $500 billion stimulus bill that Democrats have already blocked, providing money for schools, expanded unemployment benefits, as well as a second round of that PPP. Senator McConnell spoke on the Senate floor Monday afternoon.
"So tomorrow and Wednesday, Madam President, the Senate is going to vote. We will see whether our Democratic colleagues in this chamber agree that families deserve nothing rather than something, or whether they are ready to let the Senate make law across the huge areas where we do not even disagree. Tomorrow, we'll have a standalone vote on creating a whole second round of the historic Paycheck Protection Program for the hardest hit small businesses. The PPP has saved tens of millions of American jobs and kept main streets across America from turning into permanent COVID-19 ghost towns. The program is as bipartisan as it gets. Not only did it pass unanimously in the first place, we also added funding and made tweaks several times without a single objection in either chamber. So tomorrow, Tuesday, every senator will cast an up or down vote on establishing a whole second draw of these emergency loans for the small businesses that need it the most. No more all or nothing, no more endless posturing, just one clear vote on one clear good thing that nobody even says they oppose. It would make a huge difference for workers who may otherwise be laid off. And then, Madam President, on Wednesday, the Senate will vote again on a larger bill. It would pour hundreds of billions of dollars into the PPP expansion, plus more federal unemployment insurance, more money for safe schools, more money for testing, more money for vaccines, and many other important priorities. Nobody thinks this proposal would resolve every problem forever. What it does contain is a half a trillion dollars of good that Congress can do right now, through programs that Democrats do not even say they oppose. American families deserve for us to agree where we can make law.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, Republican, on the Senate floor. The Democratic leader Chuck Schumer over the weekend calling Mitch McConnell's plans a stunt, noting that the Republicans have already blocked other stimulus bills, including the House-passed HEROES Act, the $3 trillion spending bill. The votes Tuesday and Wednesday will require 60 votes, some bipartisanship, in order to move forward. You can follow it on C-SPAN 2 television or listen on the free C-SPAN radio app. On Wall Street today, the Dow fell 410, NASDAQ down 192, S&P down 56. One sign of some economic recovery, the Transportation Security Administration says it screened over 1 million passengers at U.S. airports on Sunday. First time that level has been reached in 7 months, still at 60% lower than this time 1 year ago. On Assistant Attorney General for National Security John Demers today announcing indictments against six Russian intelligence officers with the GRU. They are accused of hacking and other malware operations against foreign countries. Here's the Assistant Attorney General at the Justice Department.
Today we announce criminal charges against the conspiracy of Russian military intelligence officers who stand accused of conducting the most disruptive and destructive series of computer attacks ever attributed to a single group. I'm joined here today in this announcement by FBI Deputy Director Dave Bowditch, by the U.S. Attorney for the Western District of Pennsylvania, Scott Brady, and by the Special Agent in Charge of the Pittsburgh Field Office, Mike Christman. In the past 3 years alone, the department has charged computer intrusions or taken legal actions, 3 months alone, sorry, or taken legal action related to the activities of China, Iran, and North Korea. Each of these cases charged significant and malicious conduct that we have called out, in part, to reinforce norms of responsible nation-state behavior in cyberspace. But as this case shows, no country has weaponized its cyber capabilities as maliciously and irresponsibly as Russia.
Assistant Attorney General for National Security John Demers. The indictment specifically accuses those six alleged hackers of engaging in computer intrusions intended to support Russian government efforts to undermine, retaliate against, or otherwise destabilize Ukraine, Georgia, France, the 2018 Winter Olympic Games, and international efforts to hold Russia accountable for its use of the nerve agent Novichok on foreign soil. As mentioned earlier in this program, Thursday night, the final opportunity to see Donald Trump and Joe Biden go one-on-one in the race for president. The debate will be at Belmont University, Nashville, Tennessee, moderated by NBC News White House correspondent Kristen Welker. Do these debates still matter? A question today to USA Today Washington Bureau Chief Susan Page, who moderated the vice presidential debate.
There's some who just say this whole kind of approach is outdated. Candidates come in with their talking points. They can engage in mis and disinformation. That can then be magnified, amplified through social media. And the entire format is dated and dumb. What do you say to that?
So I would disagree. And I think that underrates the intelligence of American voters in assessing what they see. I think if you ask a candidate a question and he refuses to answer it, he dodges it, whether it's Joe Biden being asked about expanding the Supreme Court or it's Mike Pence being asked about the peaceful transition of power, I think Americans look at that and say, boy, that guy is dodging that question. That's a question I would like to know the answer to. I think there is such a value in having the two candidates next to each other, side by side, making their case, giving voters a chance to see them, make their own assessments. That's not something, you know, I love town halls, but that's not something that happens in a town hall. It's not something that happens in a paid political ad. And it's not something that happens in an interview with a friendly anchor from one network or another. It's something that happens only in one of these debates. And people who criticize the Commission on Presidential Debates may not understand what an achievement it is just to pull these debates off, just to convince the two candidates to participate. And that is especially true when one of them is the incumbent president.
Yeah, it's a massive undertaking. Susan, was there a moment up there when you were sitting at that debate and you were hearing from the candidates when you just heard something that you just flat out knew was wrong or misrepresented and you would have loved to have waved a red flag or something?
No, but there were several times when I thought, they're not answering the question I ask. You know, I spent a lot of time with a small team of folks from USA Today. There were four of us working on these questions and doing preparation for this. And we tried to hone questions that would be hard to dodge because they were narrow rather than broad. And the thing that I found most frustrating was when the candidates not only didn't answer the question, sometimes they didn't even address the topic at hand. And that was when I thought maybe I should be challenging them more directly here. But, you know, for better or worse, I handled it the way I did. I know there are many ways to handle these things. But that was the project. But it was that more than really fact checking some misstatement in my case. I think with the first presidential debate, which, of course, was much more difficult to moderate and with much higher stakes, I think the fact-checking element may have been a little more important than in the vice presidential debate.
Susan Page, USA Today Washington Bureau Chief, with Frank Sesno, head of the George Washington University School of Media and Public Affairs, formerly with CNN, part of a forum today hosted by GWU's Institute for Data, Democracy, and Politics. That final presidential debate, currently scheduled for Thursday, 9 p.m. Eastern. Of course, we'll have it live on the C-SPAN networks and an opportunity after for you to call in with your comments. And today, the Trump campaign demanding the Commission on Presidential Debates switch the topics for that final debate so that it focuses on foreign policy. Trump campaign manager Bill Stepien writing a letter to the commission, raising objections with the topics announced by the moderator, Kristen Welker of NBC News, saying the commission should observe long-standing custom by making foreign policy the central focus of Thursday's debate. Thanks for being with us on Washington Today. Download the free C-SPAN radio app to listen anywhere and get our podcasts, also available at cspan.org/podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Have a good night.